Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna. To keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale. Even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch. When it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers from the 48-yard line. Second down, 13. Brady lobbed one downfield. Caught ball by Gronkowski. Inside the 20, to the 15, 10. Gronkowski to the 5, to the 4-yard line. Holy guacamole.
There's the snap. Mahomes running to his right. Look out. He may run. Mahomes. No, throw the end down.
Battle intercepted. Picked off at the end zone. Bucs are going to beat the Chiefs. We're the champions of the world, and we still have a minute 33 to go. Devin White.
This is the big nasty. Yeah, big nasty.
All fame Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, baby.
This is Mike Allstott, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you're listening to the Cannon Fire Podcast.
Cannon Fire Podcast, brother. You ain't listening, and you're missing out. Woo!
And there the cannons go.
Cannon.
Fire them. Keep on firing them. Keep on firing them.
It is the midweek mailbag edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, live on YouTube today for episode 233. I'm your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host, the Philly Bucks fan himself, Mr. Evan Wanished. And we are joined by a very special guest, first-time guest of the pod today, an OG of the Buccaneers podcast beat. Ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Gene from Buck What You Heard. How you doing, buddy?
Man, I am thankful to have be on here with you guys, man. Thanks for having me on. Love the show. You guys have great content.
Thanks so much, man. It's been a long time coming. I think it's been long overdue that, you know, this collaboration came down, but I'm glad we're able to make it happen today. Plenty of great topics we'll talk about. Of course, all the latest Buccaneer news and, of course, your submitted questions as well, as it is the midweek mailbag edition of the show. Check it on the live chat really quickly before we go any further. Our buddy Tony Saylor, a.k.a. Tony Baloney, says, when I see Brady throwing the trophy, it reminds me of how James could throw Evan through a table. You like that?
Huh? Oh, he didn't say through a table.
He didn't say you're through implying, a table. I had to add it at the end.
You're implying the table part, but that's he's seen both of us. Does he really think James could pick me up? Does he seriously think James could pick me up? There's just no way.
Victor Madden, John Samuelson, go Bucks, go Bolts, hanging out in Germany. By the way, speaking of Bucs news, let's talk about that. I don't know if you guys saw, but it is confirmed. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers will play their first franchise game in Germany next year. How about that? The NFL with their new international game initiative. We're going to see all sorts of games. I think like the Rams are playing in China. Seahawks are playing up in Canada. And then, of course, the Buccaneers in old Deutschland. It should be a good one, I'm thinking, right?
I'm excited, man. I love Germany. I think... If you get a chance to go, there's nothing like it.
You know, let's take a look at where we are in the season. Gentlemen, believe it or not, we are in the final four-game stretch of the biggest NFL season of all time. The Buccaneers, what they have left on the slate, three big division games, and then another football team coming down from New York that they get to beat up on. So that should be fun to watch. But, you know, before we get into a lot of the questions we had today, I did a couple of topics I wanted to get your guys' opinions on. And I think something that should act as some positive reinforcement before this final playoff push for Tampa Bay. What I wanted to talk about is essentially what the Bucs have done well and what they've done well consistently over this past season and a half. I guess what a lot of people would refer to as the Tom Brady era. But, you know, the playoffs are coming, defending Super Bowl champions, pressure is high. I just wanted to take a minute and give this team some praise because, you know, I think it's important every now and again to take a step back, look at the bigger picture, and try and calm some people down, especially the cesspool that is Twitter this time of year. People are pretty upset at the Bucs right now, and you wouldn't think so considering they are a 10-3 football team. What do you think, Gene?
You know what? The Bucs score coaches, you know, you just got to kind of ignore them. You just kind of put them to the side. And in the grand scheme, you have to look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and think about these games one by one. Would they have won this game 3 years ago, 2 years ago, or I should say three years ago, 2019, 2017, are the Bucs winning some of these games? These are games that they've gone out and won, and all they're doing is winning. And that's what you have to kind of keep in perspective right here is these are games that the Bucs need to win. The game against the Bills, the Bucs needed this game to stay in with the Cardinals, to stay in with Green Bay. They went out and they won. Regardless of how they won, at the end of the day, you got a W in that column and they're on to the next game. So that's kind of how you have to look at this. And I think a lot of people are missing that in that, oh, well, they didn't do this or they didn't do this. But no, they went out and won the game. They may have played good in the first half, you know, not done so good in the second half, but when it came time down to it, they won the game. So to me, I'm enjoying the ride. I've been enjoying the ride. All these wins versus loss, you know, the number of losses, I'm enjoying this, and I'm going to continue to enjoy this throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, especially with, you know, having Tom Brady as your quarterback, you know, it's not going to be forever, right? You're not going to have Tom Brady as New England did for 20 years. So really cherish these moments. And I kept telling everybody after the Super Bowl to cherish it. Well, you know, you shouldn't be just cherishing that. Cherish this whole year, cherish next year, you know, since I believe Brady's coming back next year, cherish this era because, you know, I think Pewter Report said in an article earlier this week, it's just, you know, maybe the Bucs do have success after Brady, but there's not going to be another quarterback like Tom Brady. It's just, it's not going to happen. You're not going to see that type of quarterback ever again. Enjoy it, right? They're 10-3. The only other time they were 10-3 was the year they went to the Super Bowl and won it in 2002. Just enjoy this moment. They have a chance to clinch the NFC South on Sunday, which is something they haven't done in over 10 years. So enjoy it at all costs.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we have to wait and see what happens. But regardless of the outcome of the rest of this season, this is already the title defense for Tampa Bay. It's tough to win two Super Bowls in a row. Can they pull it off? Hell if I know. We just have to wait until the playoffs to find that out. But when it's all said and done, when Tom Brady officially retires, whether it be as a Buck or, you know, a one-day contract with the Patriots, which seems a little likely, when it's all said and done, when this team has come and gone, when Bruce Arians is no longer the head coach in Tampa, this team in particular, the Bruce Arians, Tom Brady, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it'll be looked back fondly in Bucs history. It will be that team. Like, you remember how for the longest time, Brooks, Sapp, Rondé, Barber, all of these guys on the defense, John Lynch, you know, the Tampa too, Monty Kiffin, you know, Tony Dungy, and then of course John Gruden, you know, these conversations, the way, the regard of how high we held that football team for so long until they were able to actually win the Super Bowl again. You know, when it's all said and done, this is going to be looked at as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Bucs teams of all time. So yeah, folks, as we get ready for the most hectic part of the year, it's the playoff push. You just got to win out to get the one seed. That's what you want to do. But let's look at how far we've come, right? Who would have thought 3 years ago we'd be talking about the Buccaneers tied for the first, for the I'm sorry, tied in the hunt for the best first seed in the NFC, and then tied for the best record in the NFL at 10-3. Like, it's just, it's important to remember where you come from. But as we look at some of the improvements this team has made, there is a unit I wanted to talk about and just give them as much credit as we possibly can, man. Let's start with this offensive line. A couple of players we can talk about, some athletic guys who have stood out lately, but I think this offensive line as a whole has become the standard of what an NFL offensive line should be. Now, this is just my humble opinion. Everybody has their opinions, but I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line has become almost the backbone of this team on the offensive side of the ball, because you have all the flashy things. You have Tom Brady, who's putting together an MVP campaign. You have the wide receivers who are freakishly athletic. Even without Antonio Brown, it is a luxury of playmakers out there on the offensive side of the ball. Hall of Fame caliber tight end in Rob Gronkowski. But this offensive line, man, their ability to protect Tom Brady over the last two seasons, I think, is what has made them so special. And, you know, some next-gen stats for you here. I pulled this one out of my, you know, my little journal here. But last week, heading into the game against Buffalo, Tom Brady came into that game averaging 2.5 seconds from the snap to the throw, third fastest in the league, and the fastest for him in his career since they actually started tracking that stuff in 2016. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with how Tom Brady can throw the ball fast, which certainly helps this offensive line. But aside from that, there have been several plays where he's got to hang onto the ball for 3 seconds, 4 seconds, which for a quarterback in the NFL is an eternity, right? I mean, if your average snap to throw is 3.5, 4 seconds, chances are your offensive line isn't that good and you're fighting for your life, or, you know, you're just playing an awesome defense. But when Tom has to hold the ball for 3, 4, 5 seconds, this offensive line just continues to eat. I mean, right tackle Tristan Wirfs, second year in the NFL, he's playing like an 8-year All-Pro. Donovan Smith is having the best season of his career. You know, Ryan Jensen did have the hiccup first snap of the game. He was able to come over that. The interior offensive line, Ali Marpet still playing at a very high level. I'm excited about what Alex Kappa brings to the table, but I also feel just as good about Aaron Stinney, because we know that contract with Kappa is coming up. But this offensive line as a whole, when you look at what they were in 2018, 2019, we used to have a quarterback who had to evade pressure because our offensive line was so bad. And now these guys are doing such a great job at making Tom's job easier for him. He has time to throw when he needs it. Certainly helps that he gets the ball out fast. But this O-line, I think, over the course of the last 3 or 4 seasons is one of the most improved aspects of this team.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. You're all good. I just want to really quick say, you know, the offensive line, really, it started with, and I'm going to credit Jason Light to how he built it, because it's not like he went out and continually, you know, just threw money at the biggest offensive lineman out there. Sure, there are the J.R. Sweezys, there are the Anthony Collins. But then, you know, Ryan Jensen was a huge hit. That's the only free agent that's on that offensive line. The rest of those guys were drafted homegrown talent. And that's how you build a proper football team, right? And we've all been saying it for years. You know, the thing is, you don't win a championship through free agency. You can't do that. I get it. But I mean, Donovan Smith, Tristan Wirfs, Ali Marpet, Alex Kappa, especially finding the guys like Alex Kappa and Ali Marpet, two guys who didn't come from the biggest schools, weren't the most athletic, you know, weren't going to pop out at you at the combine, but he saw something in them, and it's worked out tremendously. I mean, Alex Kappa is probably the weak link on that offensive line, and he is a good offensive guard in this league. So, I mean, Ali Marpet, I think, is a top 3 or 4 guard in the league, I think. And Tristan Wirfs is, you know, I hate to, you know, last year I didn't want it. Everybody was saying, oh, he's already a top 5 tackle. And I was like, he's a rookie. But I mean, this year he's picking up right where he left off. And that there's, I think there's no doubt that he's a top 5 right tackle. It's incredible. Yes, it does help that Brady does get the ball out quick, obviously, but even in their running lanes, they're seeing that they're starting to open up for Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones. You're starting to see these things, and it's a great development.
Yeah, I'm gonna follow that up and just say, you know, props to Jason Light for what he's done. I mean, I was pissed when, you know, they blew up the offensive line they had when Lovie Smith came in and just like started over from scratch. When Jason Light got a hold of this, the cupboard was bare. So this is all Jason Light's doing, building this offensive line up to what it is right now. And, you know, I give him credit. I give him props. But like you said, I do want to mention that Tom Brady, the decision maker, being able to break down a defense and know what to do, it plays a huge part in that, because you look at the previous quarterback and how long he held onto the ball. It put so much stress on an offensive line that just didn't need to happen. But we saw the resurgence of a Donovan Smith, who there were times where I wanted to launch his ass into the sun. But what we've seen from him, I would not ask for you can't ask for a better run blocker. I don't know why they just don't run the ball behind him just all the time. But, you know, you have to kind of mix it up. But just to kind of get back to what I was saying, this offensive line is incredible, what they've done. Shout out to Jason Light. I think Tom Brady plays a part in this. The offensive line coach for the Bucs is doing an incredible job as well. So, you know, just collectively in concert, they've all done an amazing job. And, you know, you see that Pro Football Focus. Donovan Smith is what ranked number, I think he's 10th, you know, left tackles. Tristan Wirfs is 4th. Alex Kappa, 19th. Ali Marpet is 5th. I mean, you've got a good lineup here. I mean, it's exciting to see this, because I've been complaining about the offensive line for years. So it's awesome to see this and see where they are. And everybody's working as a whole unit on that offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, if you guys want a taste of the next level athleticism that I think we have seen displayed from this offensive line, the game tape from Sunday's win over Buffalo is a perfect place to do it. The 47-yard touchdown by Leonard Fournette is probably just one of the cleanest run blocking plays we have seen from this offensive line all season. Everybody played their role to perfection. The tackles rolled out. Donovan Smith is running in space and absolutely flattens Jordan Poyer. I could watch that on repeat all day long. But yeah, it's incredible the development these guys have had. And really quickly, as we talk about improvement over the course of the season, I wanted to take a look at the other side of the football. And this is actually going to lead into our first mailbag question of the day. But, you know, before we talk about this front four and what Todd Bowles is able to throw at opposing quarterbacks, I want to talk about one guy, one of our linebackers, the outside linebacker, Shaquille Barrett. I'll tell you, man, 58's ability to get after the quarterback this season has become a big factor on this pass rush once again. It seemed like it took him a few games to get warmed up, but I have noticed he has had some massive improvement as the season goes on. I forget the right tackle's name for Buffalo, but he was giving him hell all afternoon. And I mean, you know, 58's just found a way to get his nose back into the play. And I mean, I think we can also credit Todd Bowles here. I'll tell you, a big reason they were able to get after Josh Allen the way that they did was just pressures, different looks up front that people haven't exactly seen before. And it's crazy to think that we're 14 weeks in and the Bucs are still running new defensive fronts to, you know, try and confuse all of these offensive lines and send different guys after the quarterback. The first sack of the game, who was the first person there? It wasn't any of the D linemen. It was Andrew Adams, who came untouched off of the edge. Yep. Because the offensive line got so confused at the front that was looking at him, because it was, God, the Bucs were pushing a 5-man front. It was like, I think it was one line. I'd have to watch the play again, but I think it was like a 5-man front, one linebacker. And basically you had Andrew Adams sitting on the edge. And if you're a right tackle or a tight end, you don't really know what that guy's going to do, right? Is he going to drop back into the coverage? Are they running zone? Is he going to man up on somebody? Nope. He's going to come screaming unblocked off of the edge and try and get after your quarterback. Now, would have helped if he got there, but it also helps when you guys, when you have guys like Devin White and Shaq Barrett able to run him down from behind and clean that play up. But, you know, I'd say just the ability that this pass rush has shown me these past couple of weeks, generating consistent pressure on these quarterbacks, has definitely been an improvement. Because the first three or four games, I think we were asking ourselves on this show every single week, once a week, we're like, where is the pass rush? It really seems like a lot of these quarterbacks just have way too much time. And, you know, that's something I think they've done a really good job of fixing these past few weeks. And with Todd Bowles pulling new things out of his hat all the time, it makes me believe that he's got some stuff we haven't seen before ready to go for the playoffs. And that's a pretty good feeling.
I think it really started with the Colts game, especially as far as Shaq Barrett's play is concerned. It felt like, you know, Shaq Barrett was very quiet. The loss versus Washington, he didn't, he, like some people didn't even know if he played. I mean, he was just completely invisible. And then he goes out and has a decent game against the Giants, but then he really comes alive against the Colts and possibly saves that game for them because the Colts were driving down to start the second half when Shaq Barrett had the strip sack. So really, you know, the start of his hot streak here came against Indy, and then it continued against Atlanta. I thought they played well, obviously five sacks against the Falcons, who's a bad offensive line. But then you're facing the Bills, who their offensive line isn't great. It's definitely a weakness of theirs, but it's also not like a bottom five unit, I don't believe, and especially a guy like Josh Allen, who's able to break out of sacks and stuff and avoid some pressures. It was important to get there, and they did in the first half. Now, I did say in the first half, because in the second half, you know, it's tough when a team is trying to really run, right? And the Bills were trying to do that a lot more in the second half because the Bucs gave them the looks to do it. So when you're doing that, it's going to render your pass rushers not as effective. But as far as Shaq Barrett in the first half goes, yeah, I mean, he was darn near unblockable. And he's been really good, and they're going to need him to be good the rest of the season in the playoffs. This is what they paid him for, right? This is exactly the type of player that you paid him to be. And yeah, you're going to need him to step up.
To me, I'm a huge Shaq Barrett fan. Just watching him play away from the ball, away from where the play is, just his play has been instrumental in the Bucs getting defensive stops, getting turnovers. You know, you may not always see him on camera, but Shaq Barrett is working. And the one thing that I will say, you know, if you go back and look at all 22 and you look away from where the ball is and where, you know, what he's doing, defensive coordinators have to game plan for him. And I don't think he gets enough credit, you know, that he should, because you're not seeing it in a stat box, or it's not something tangible you can look at. But when you're, you know, sacks are sexy. Yeah, and we can all admit to that. But when you're looking at pressures, when you're looking at forcing somebody to double team you, and you're taking resources away from another part of position on the line to take care of Shaq Barrett, I think he's more than, you know, done what he's needing to do throughout the season. It may not show up on the stat box, but he's continuously working. So I mean, all I have to do is look back to 2018. Or look back to 2017 and look at that line and look at what we have now. We are blessed to have Shaq Barrett on this team.
Do you guys, I mean, I know you both of you guys remember, but any of our people listening might get a kick out of this. And sorry to interrupt you, Gene, but.
Oh, no, you're good.
You know, you look at this line from 2017, from 2018. Do you guys remember when, like, Will Golston was supposed to be our big developmental outside pass rusher?
Yeah.
Will Golston, a guy who has found a second wind being an interior lineman in this new defense for Todd Bowles. Like, that's just another testament, I think, of how far this team has come in a lot of different areas.
Absolutely. Yeah,
the 2017 pass rush, that was the worst one. I think that was because that, and then that offseason is when Jason Light acquired Jason Pierre-Paul and drafted Vita Vea. But as far as 2017, I think their leading sacker at like week 11 was Will Clark. I think he was their leading sacker. It was brutal. I think they ended up with like 22 sacks or something that entire season. Just awful. And you're 100% right, Gene. It's just a night and day difference. And guys like Shaq Barrett, Vita Vea, Jason Pierre-Paul,
yeah,
Will Golston. And then, you know, when you mix in a guy like Todd Bowles and the fronts he's able to make up as far as blitzing goes and getting a guy like Devin White and using those guys to their strengths, it is night and day, to what it used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of finishing up what I was saying, yeah, sacks are sexy. You can see them on the stat box and you see what strip sack or, you know, whatever, you see that. But when you're seeing somebody putting pressure and it's putting pressure on that offensive line and they're forced to move resources to take care of something, he's doing his job, in my opinion. I mean, you may not see it in the numbers, but those intangibles do make a big difference. And I can't think of anybody else that I would want to have on that line right now, you know, other than, you know, a Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, and shout out really quickly in the live chat, all of our people checking in. The AJ Show says, what's up? Of course, Gene Buck, what you heard in there as well. Mary Atkinson, Jacko Bluntly, our buddy Tony Baloney. So let's go ahead and get to our first mailbag question here. It has to do with this defense and defensive coordinator Todd Bowles. listen, I know the past 15 minutes we have been singing this guy's praises about what he's able to bring to this defense, especially this pass rush and the way they've evolved over the years, but we do have one question from resident Tony Baloney, and he has that nickname for a reason. Maybe this question here will, we'll put this one in the evidence folder, but regardless, we appreciate Tony for sending this question. Is he asks us this: is Todd Bowles overrated? Outside of the playoff run last year, his schemes seem to get figured out and torn to shreds on a pretty regular basis. He has given up some big leads since 2019 as well. Now, I will say, as far as the big leads thing, football situational, you know what I mean? Like, when you look at Buffalo, the Bucs giving up a 24-3 lead, are we going to blame that mostly on the defense because those guys were gassed, or are we going to look at the offense who only put up 3 points in the second half? You know, I think a big lead given up is going to factor into a lot of different things outside of your defensive coordinator. But, Evan, I'll toss this one over to you first, my friend, as we get ready for the playoffs. I talked about Todd Bowles potentially still having some things in his bag, but, you know, let's go ahead and get Tony's question out of the way. Is Todd Bowles overrated? Does he deserve the credit we've been giving him for the past 15 minutes?
Yes, he does, because they don't win the Super Bowl if he's not a defensive coordinator. So he put together a masterful game plan. And I understand that Tony acknowledges the playoff run. I get it, right? He acknowledges it in the question. But, I partially agree that if the Bucs defense is not getting pressure, a lot of the times they sort of put their corners on some islands and in some tough situations. And if they're not getting pressure, they can be exposed a little bit. Sometimes they do play a little bit too much zone. The biggest gripe, and really one of the only gripes I have with Todd Bowles, is his tendency to drop into Ndamukong Suh, Vita Vea, Shaq Barrett, like those guys in the coverage occasionally, which actually, as far as I've noticed, at least, he hasn't done as much the past 4 or 5 games. He hasn't really done it. And what do you know? The defense has actually played pretty decent. So
real quick, as much as people might not like it, it has given us some great moments. I mean, JPP, 2 interceptions in 2 weeks last year. 12-year defensive tackle Steve McClendon get his first career interception this season. That doesn't happen without dropping those big guys back into coverage.
Well, Steve McClendon wasn't in coverage, though. Daniel Jones just sucks.
Yeah, Daniel Jones gifted that to him.
Yeah.
You got those space eaters out there, you know? That's what they got to do.
Exactly.
If I could jump in here real quick, I want to say that execution really needs to be considered when we're talking about Todd Bowles. That has to factor in to your opinion of him. How are the players executing what Todd Bowles is wanting them to do? I'm going to start there. But going back to Todd Bowles, I got two words for you: Mike Smith. That's all I've got to say about Todd Bowles and how good he is. Night and day, night and day. And I can tell you right now, and I will die on this hill, this guy, he should be a head coach. I mean, just looking at how he plays. And that's a hot take. Maybe that's that Facebook hot take that we all talk about here. But I love Todd Bowles. I love what he does. And when he draws up a play, when he dials up a blitz, how are they executing? Are the players, I mean, the coach, the defensive coordinator can't go out there and play the play. He can dial it up.
What do you mean? Sure he can. This is a guy with college experience, right? Yeah. Him and BA.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is, guys, when you're looking at this, when you're being critical of Todd Bowles, look at how these players are executing what he's putting out there. I mean, if you look at it and you look at the play, and yeah, it could work versus what's going on, or is it the players aren't executing like what they should be, and this is why there's a problem with this defense? I think that's something we really need to consider. I mean, all I have to do is go back and look at Julio Jones, and Julio Jones said it. I just kept doing the same thing over and over again until, you know, and they weren't able to stop me. That's an indictment on your defensive coordinator. Whereas here, you're looking at guys, and I've looked at times where Joe, and I love Joe Tryon, and just for the record, JTS, one of my favorite players, but there have been some times where he's taken some bad angles that he should have had a sack, or he should have wrapped up, or he should have tackled low instead of tackling high, but he's a rookie. Didn't play all 2020. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying it is what it is, and this is what we're looking at. So before you can sit here and rain down hatred or blame on a defensive coordinator. You got to look at what the defensive coordinator's calling and then look at how the players are executing the play.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a really, really good point and something not a lot of people take into account. You know, looking at the Bills, for example, just getting back into the game the way that they did, I think of that rushing touchdown for Josh Allen. You know, Joe Tryon misses a tackle on that. That's huge.
That was a poor angle. That was a poor angle that he took.
It's huge. I mean, there are several instances. We talked about Andrew Adams. I thought he had a pretty strong game. I thought this was one of his better games since, you know, that three-pick performance against Cam Newton in the Carolinas, which hopefully he can replicate here in a couple of weeks.
Because he's back.
All right. But, you know, there's just certain instances where you look at this game and say, oh, the tackling could have been better. They could have wrapped up better there. And just like you said, Gene, you know, you can't put that on the coordinator. He can only control so much. Can Todd Bowles throw a helmet on and get back out there? Probably. I mean, him and Bruce Arians could do it. Is it wise? Probably.
I don't know. Bruce Arians has an Achilles injury.
Hey, listen, he's not on the scooter anymore, though. I think that recovery, I don't know what
He's on the TB12 method, man.
Hey, you know what? I'm about to get on that myself, man.
Right? It's all about the pliability.
I'm really thinking about it. Yeah.
Our buddy James did it for how long did he do it? Do you know, Evan? Like 2 weeks, I think.
He did it for a week.
Oh, a week.
How did it work out for him?
He was miserable, he said.
He said he actually like feel better. He said just be prepared to go to the bathroom a lot because you are drinking an obscene amount of water. Okay. And he said that the food options are you'll get used to it, he says, but at first you're like, this sucks.
Really?
Hey, real quick. Tony, Tony is saying if the Bucs players aren't executing a blitz, stop calling it. I'm going to disagree with that. I think that's back. The onus is on the Bucs to take advantage of what they have there. You've got Vita Vea. You've got Ndamukong Suh. You've got JPP, Joe Tryon. You've got Levante David. You've got a very quality defense, and they should be able to do more than what they're doing. Again, maybe the offensive line is winning that battle. All I can say is this. They're just not executing, and I've seen plays where they haven't, and nobody's talked about this. I mean, you can say what you want to about Todd Bowles. He's trusting his defense to go out and do what he's executing, asking them to do. And they're not executing at times. So, again, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, the Bucs have three losses. All right, so whatever you're saying, I get what you're saying. The Bucs have three losses. And they really should have two, maybe one. But two at the most, two losses. And, you know, they're going to get it together. I really believe they're going to get it together. I'm enjoying the ride. So, Tony, put the top down. Get you a soda. Enjoy the ride, man, because the Bucs are doing good. Have 10 wins, double-digit wins. We haven't been able to say that for a long time, but here we are. Enjoy it.
With four games left in the season, the Bucs have an opportunity. With four games left, the Bucs have an opportunity to match their total win total from just a year ago. So, like, let's keep that in mind, right? I mean, last year, 2020, when we were doing coverage of that season and they were approaching seven wins on the season, that was such a huge deal because we're barely halfway through the season. And look, they've already eclipsed their win total from the year before. Like, I think progress is obviously something that hindsight's always 2020. And after the years go by, you can look back and you can clearly look at improvement. But, you know, week to week, when you're looking at things like that, I think there's so many factors that go into it. And, you know, just a great point, like you said there, Gene. But let's go ahead and get to our next mailbag question here. And this has to do a little bit with maybe some of the holes in that defense we had talked about a couple of minutes ago of Todd Bowles. Maybe some other areas this team could improve. But as we are in the final stretch of the regular season, just four games left, this is a playoff push for Tampa Bay. 10-3 right now, four games left on the schedule. Hoping to get that one seed, get the home field advantage for the playoffs. This team still undefeated inside Raymond James Stadium, which should hopefully be rocking this Sunday night as they are getting ready to host division rival New Orleans with a chance to clinch the division. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers actually hosting a redout. So if you haven't heard, if you're going to that game or plan to go to that game, make sure you wear your red because that's what the Bucs would want you to do. And if you don't have anything red, that's cool. You show up to the game, they're giving out red t-shirts for free this week. So if you go ahead.
I assume there's red end zones. I don't think that's been announced, but I assume there's going to be red end zones.
We haven't seen it yet this year. It took us the entire season to actually see the Bucks wear red at home, right? And I mean, we got to see it against the Giants. We got to see it against Buffalo. It was red on white, but I think, if memory serves right, they will be wearing the red and pewter this week. Is it the second time?
I'm good with that.
Yep. Second time this year, both against the Saints.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. I think the more games in the red and pewter you get, the better. Listen, I said it last week. The red and the white is low-key like my favorite combination just because it gives me nostalgia. Like, not a lot of people like it. You know, the helmet and the pants don't match. It looks a little weird. Yeah. But I remember watching 2008 to 2012. Every time the Bucks were wearing red at home, they always had those white pants on. So it just kind of became something I grew used to. But let's go ahead and get to our next question here. This comes from our buddy Real Talk Sports Pod on Instagram. His question is this: what is the Buccaneers' biggest weakness headed into the playoffs? And this is actually the name of today's episode. So sorry we didn't get to the topic sooner, but we had a bunch of other great Bucks talk we had to get out of the way first. But Gene, I want to get your thoughts on this one first. We talked about so far what the Bucks have been able to do well, but let's peel this thing back a little further and look at maybe stuff they're not able to do that well. When it comes to playoffs, what do you think could hurt this team?
For the 2021 season, it's been consistency, whether it's on defense, whether it's on offense. I don't know what it is. When you have a quality offense like the Bucks have, they should be able to move the chains. They shouldn't get a three and out. Three and outs should not be in our vocabulary. I understand there are sometimes that it is, but that fourth quarter, the second half of that Buffalo game, they should have kept that Buffalo defense on the field a little bit longer than what they did. There was a game against the Washington football team, WTF. And I'm telling you, they should have been able to get, you know, Washington off the field. Just those types of things. It's just they have this talent, but they haven't been able to consistently do what they need to do. So it's just what it is. And I hope that at some point everything comes together. We haven't had that game like the LA Rams game or that game like the Atlanta Falcons game last year where everything came together and they just started rolling, steamrolling everybody else. But that's what you want. You want this team to get it, and I wouldn't have a problem if they lost a game where if it woke them up to where they know that they have to win these games, they have to play more consistent, they have to do what they need to do. And I'm hoping that at some point that's what happens.
I think if we're looking at games this season, and I'll toss it to you here, Evan, in a second, but you know, looking at games that serve as a wake-up call for this team, hopefully it was the Washington game, because I don't have the schedule in front of me, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they haven't lost a game since then, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
I mean, so hopefully that's the turning point for this team, because the storyline after that was, you know, Bruce Arians coming out and saying, well, these guys had a great week of practice. They thought they could go in there and win this one. So hopefully they do understand that at this point, you know, they could be the one seed if they weren't so lackadaisical. I think I said that word correctly. I know big words. But if they weren't so lethargic on the road that week against Washington, they could very well have already secured the NFC South. But
real quick, I want to throw this in here because we got to talk irony. The Bucks are undefeated at home and they're struggling on the road. Last year, it was just like the polar opposite last year. So my hope and prayer is that everything runs through Tampa. I would love to see that. And that would be the best scenario for Tampa. But anyway, go back to what you were saying. I do apologize. I just wanted to throw that out there that, it's just like flip-flop from last year.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a great point. I mean, if I could tack onto it as well, Bruce Arians said in his press conference today, you know, they definitely notice how important that is when it comes to securing home field advantage for the playoffs. This time of year, you want to be playing as home as much as you can, because let's face it, you know, while the Bucks did have the most difficult path to the Super Bowl in 2020, it was the COVID season. It was, you know, 9,000 people in the NFC Championship game with a bunch of cardboard, a bunch of cardboard flaps. If you go up to Lambeau in January this year, it's going to be 70,000 people packed into that stadium, standing room only, screaming their asses off. So hopefully, if the Bucks can secure home field advantage, a bunch of these season ticket holders don't sell their tickets to the away teams in the lower bowl. But, you know, having a full stadium full of people
real quick to that point.
Let's take a minute. Let's talk about this, because I knew this was going to come up.
All these guys are home teams. All these teams. New Orleans has had the Bucks number for God who knows how long. Green Bay, just these teams that the Bucks faced in the playoffs, they couldn't get it done. The onus was on them. Actually everything was working in their favor. If you're the home team, that works in your favor. But the Tampa Bay Buccaneers overcame that and did what they needed to do. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, I heard you about the Bills fans and stuff in the bowl, and right, here's the thing. Like I don't care, right? Like it doesn't matter, right? But I understand the frustrations when you look on TV and you see, you know, it's supposed to be red but you see blue, right? Like I get it. However, Florida, it is what it is. Like you're in the state.
It is Florida. I mean,
it's a transient state.
Yeah.
It's always gonna, like, you look at a Miami game, you look at a Jacksonville game, and then, you know, when you go out to California, you look at Chargers games, like you look at even Raiders games. Like there was I remember the Raiders played the Bears earlier this year in Vegas, and there was a ton of Bears fans there. So it just it happens in some states and some areas.
Transient state.
Yeah, and just, you know, with some fan bases also. Well, you know, you're not going to see as many Texans fans at a Bucks home game, you know, when the Texans are in town versus when the Bills or the Giants or the Cowboys, when those teams are in town, yeah, they're going to travel well.
And yeah. to counter that side of the argument, you know, let's face it, I, of all people, we should be grateful that the Bucks actually have a packed house again, right? Do you remember the solid, I don't know how many years in a row, where you couldn't watch a single Bucks game on TV in the city of Tampa because they couldn't sell enough tickets. So, you know, games were blacked out for 2-3 years at a time. And maybe if they got a primetime game, you'd be able to watch it. But, like, you know, for the longest time,
we
just talked about the inability to pack that stadium. And now it is packed.
Super Bowl will do that.
Yeah, a Super Bowl will definitely do that. But, I mean, even before then, you know, signing Tom Brady will do that.
Yeah, and
if there's one thing that move did for the Glazers was put butts in seats, and we've seen that in full effect. Even if they are getting sold to other fans, it still is a full stadium, which is very good to have.
I just want to throw this out here because I remember, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s when the Bucks were rolling and you could not get a ticket to Ray J. There was no way you're getting in there. But it shocked me because third quarter, oh, the Bucks are winning. We're going to go home. We know they're going to win, that kind of thing. And, you know, again, it goes back to what you were saying about the Bucks being or Tampa being a transient city, Florida being a transient state. That's kind of what you run into. And, you know, back to your point, I mean, just if the Bucks are winning, you've got a full stadium. People want to see the defending Super Bowl champions, whether it's them winning or whether it's you're going out hoping to see Tom Brady lose. So, you know, it's great. Either way, it's just good to see that. And I'm not of the class to disrespect people that are selling their tickets. If you sell your tickets, you do. I'm not going to count anybody's money. We're living in a crazy society right now where people are struggling. Some people, you know, may have bills to pay. It's Christmas. Hey, if I can hit a lick on a Bills fan and have them pay $1,400 for two tickets, hey, I'm what can I do? You know, what can you not do?
It's very fair. You know, not only is it really not my place or anybody's place to judge the situation that somebody else is in, but you know, the fact of the matter is the market price for Bucks tickets is what it is. I might need to get a sugar mama or two the next time I plan to see the Bucks in Raymond James Stadium. But, you know, people got to do what they got to do. And listen, like you said,
get over to New Tampa, my friend.
Yeah. If you well,
I've heard, I saw it on the internet. I can't tell you from personal experience. I've just heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. But listen, if you can make back your initial investment and then some.
Like, and you can even pay for your season tickets for next year just off of one game.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, you know, as much as we can sit here and be grumps about it, the fact of the matter is people are doing what they need to do. And it's really not my place to judge it. I'm just a home team guy. I'm that guy.
I'm right there with you, man. I'm an ex-season ticket holder. I totally get it.
Yeah. Well, and look, like, I still believe that stadium was probably 70-30 in favor of Bucks fans still. Like, just because you saw it wasn't like in the past, it used to be 50-50. Like, it used to be ridiculous right. when the Giants or the Eagles or the Cowboys or the Dolphins would come to town.
I went to that Monday Night Football game against Pittsburgh in 2018. And to this day, that's the worst ratio of terrible towels to red and pewter I've ever seen.
I had to take a shower after that game.
Oh man, we had the best seats in the house. I'll never forget it. DeSean Jackson, it seems like one of the only useful things he did in Tampa was that punt return touchdown, something that so many people had waited for. We finally saw him line up as a returner, takes it to the crib. I don't even remember the penalty, who it was on, but it came back, did not count, and they could not replicate it. And
I cried real tears.
Yeah, man, that would have kept them in the game. That was a fun one, but again, you know, the Steelers are just like a team that you mentioned, just like the Bills, just like maybe the Eagles, right? Like when
not maybe the Eagles.
No,
when
they come to your town, they're gonna represent. You're gonna know they're there. And in this case, with it being Buffalo, there's gonna be some broken tables left behind afterwards. Yeah. So
yeah, you know, the mafia is gonna show up in full force.
Yeah, and the mafia has been in witness protection this week. Just FYI, I'm just
out
there. Hey, the RICO Act or whatever. The mafia has been in. They've been quiet this week. Witness protection.
Well, the way some of them have been acting, they should go back to daycare. So
yeah, basically.
Hey, well, let's go ahead and start to wrap this thing up, Evan. I wanted to get your two cents on the question that we had earlier. You know, what do you think is the Bucks' biggest weakness heading into the playoffs? And as we look at this final quarter of the season, what's most imperative that they improve?
Yeah, you know, I don't really have when you look at the roster, there isn't a key, oh, they need this, right? Oh, they need an offensive lineman. They need this. You know, I think the biggest weakness is going to be the consistency, just like Gene said, and the being able to execute. Like, these are fantastic football players that are having trouble executing at big moments. Tom Brady missed Rob Gronkowski and Chris Godwin on two wide open throws that would have kept drives alive versus the Bills and would have also ran time off the clock. Like, probably that can't happen in the playoffs.
I mean, if the Bucs got a single touchdown in that second half, I think they could have finished the game. Granted,
they would have. Yeah, it would have been done.
It would have put the game away.
You know, and like, you know, the fourth down after. After the Bills faked the punt, didn't get it, and the Bucks go for it on fourth down, which I agree with the decision to go for on fourth down. I like the aggressiveness, but they got to execute better. It's all about execution. Those types of mistakes cannot happen in the playoffs, or else you're going home. It's not a 7-game series. It's one and done. You get one shot at this, and you know Tom Brady has really spoken about that a lot, like especially this year, like. There is no do-overs. Like it's one. It is one and done. You get one shot to make a play. And if you don't do it, oh well. Like nobody's gonna feel sorry for you. So they need to start executing a little bit better. They've been doing a great job of it recently. So they just need to do it on a more consistent basis, I think.
Yeah. I got one more topic I wanted to touch on, and this one's near and dear to my heart because it involves a personal friend of the podcast, but people have been talking about it. It has become a narrative.
We're not doing this.
Yeah, we are.
We are doing this.
So, what are we doing? So Bradley Pinion, the people's champion, good friend of the Cannon Fire podcast. We've had him on a few times, got to talk to him, get his take on the 2020 season and everything in between. So the Bucks brought in an extra punter yesterday. And when asked about it today, BA kind of dismissed it. He said, listen, you look at the rest of the league right now with COVID just taking out teams. I mean, the Packers and the Rams just got done playing in the COVID bowl on Monday Night Football. you know, he said it's a contingency thing. It's, you know, God forbid we lose anybody in our special teams, we have another guy who's good to go. Do you buy that?
No. Yes, because Bradley Pinion showed up on the injury report today.
He did. So. I actually did not know that. But I guess the storyline that I was going to take from that is a lot of people have talked about the People's Champ, particularly underperforming these past couple of weeks. His average punt distance, I think, is like not that good, but I think context also matters there. Your punt distance doesn't have to be great if you're getting touchbacks every single time or if you're pinning these guys inside the 20. But it was a really strong start for Bradley Pinion this season, and it seems like he kind of fell off. And this is, I don't know about a throwaway question, but come on, we're closing the show with punter talk. So you know
I can't wait until we have Bradley Pinion on the show for the third consecutive year to review this season. I'm going to bring this up. We're going to talk about his so-called struggles here. He does need to be a little bit better. I mean, you saw the Bills punter. The Bills punter made some plays.
He was right? putting like, on a clinic. He was putting in work.
Like some actual plays. And Bradley Pinion does need to step up a little bit there. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think he was playing this. This was his Super Bowl as far as the Bills punter.
Yeah, but yeah.
I don't think there's any more than that. He was hyped up for this game. It's just what it is. I don't know. Bradley Pinion has not put Tampa in a bad situation, a lot consistently. I don't know. I just think he.
It also hurts that their kickoff coverage is just awful. So
yeah. True. I mean, we can talk about the punting categories all we want,
exactly, because you kind of have to factor in the whole special team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to be collective. Kind of like you can't smash a quarterback for what he's doing. You have to kind of look at the whole offense. So,
right.
When you're like looking at that, but right. Yeah, that's, I'm right there with you. I think Bradley Pinion will be fine. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think he'll be fine. I think that, you know, you have to wrap up and tackle. If you can touch them right where they are, you can change a play from, you know, the 15 yard line to the 30 yard line. I mean, the big difference, it's a huge difference. So being able to execution has been the theme throughout this wonderful show today. And I think the Bucs just really, you know, it needs to be a factor. I mean, you can't look at just the offensive coordinator. You can't look at just the defensive coordinator. You look at how this play was called. Was it executed to where it would work? And you have to factor in so much more than just, it's more than just basic, oh, the offensive coordinator sucks or the defensive coordinator sucks. And they should have called this play or whatever. And it needs to be execution. And like you said, execution is key. And I would love to see more of that. I think we need to see more consistency, you know, as the season progresses. We need to see market improvement on all these games moving forward. There just has to be more improvement every time the Bucs hit the field.
Yeah, and we've, you know, to kind of close things out, we have talked about over the course of the season, when you look at this Bucs roster on paper, it is safe to say that this is a team in the NFL who has the ability to just out-talent certain teams. Like, you know, any given Sunday in the NFL is a big deal. If you show up to your game and you don't give a damn, you're going to lose. But, you know, the Bucs are still in a position where they don't have to be perfect because they have so many playmakers on both sides of the ball. But
don't have to be perfect right now.
Right. But when you start playing these better teams, and we said this all year, you know, we were counting down the days to the Bills game, looking at, you know, when they beat the Falcons the first time and they left points on the field, but they also just put up 48 points, you know, you're going to be mad that they didn't get those touchdowns, because when you're playing a team like the Bills, or even when the playoffs come around, you have to execute. You have to find consistency. Yeah. You have to just go out there and do your thing. And I think for the Bucs, doing their thing is playing the brand of football they have become known for. You're the Super Bowl champs. Go out there and play like it. And I think that's really all there is to be said. But ladies and gentlemen,
so real quick, I have to acknowledge Tony in the chat one more time. He says Brady didn't miss Godwin was held on a long incompletion. I'm not talking about that one. He was held. There should have been a call, which, you know, I guess, you know, only Bills fans can complain about the refs. But Yeah, I'm not talking about that one. It was a third and seven. I pulled up the thing. It was a third and seven on the Tampa 38, and Brady missed Godwin. He was wide open right in the middle of the field, sort of ran right in the zone, and Brady just missed him. Would have extended the drive. And at the time, I believe it was 24-10 was still a score. So would have extended the drive there and had the Tampa hold the ball for a little bit longer. But yeah, that was the one I was talking about. I wasn't talking about the longer ball there.
Yeah, well, as the regular season winds down, all of these stories to, just pay close attention to, especially with the playoffs coming up as quickly as they are. For Tampa Bay, they just got to keep winning, man. As I mentioned at the start of the show, four games left on the season. Three of those are division games. Should be winnable. Hopefully they can clinch the NFC South Sunday night in their home stadium.
If Green Bay loses one game with Aaron, we haven't talked to you guys since Arizona lost. So here's the situation. If Green Bay loses one game and the Bucs win all four, the Bucs are the one seed. So that's ultimately the goal there.
Yeah, 100%. So just a lot of things to monitor as we get to the most exciting time of the year, December football. And what a breath of fresh air as the Buccaneers continue to play meaningful December football for the second year in a row as they look to defend their Super Bowl title. But, of course, just plenty of good stuff as we wrap up the regular season. But with all of that being said, ladies and gentlemen, that's just about going to do it for this week's midweek mailbag edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. Want to give a huge thanks to our guy Gene from Buck What You Heard for hanging out with us. It has been very long overdue. But, Gene, where can the people find you and your content?
Yeah, you can reach me at Buck What You Heard. On YouTube, especially, hit me up, give me a like, subscribe. I'm really trying to do a whole lot more with YouTube. Hit me up on Twitter. You follow me, I'll follow you back at Buck What You Heard. I follow everybody back. I love talking football or just random stuff. It just depends. Man.
Oh yeah, Gene's a great follow on Twitter. I've been following you since the super heavyweight days.
Just
great Buccaneers content.
And, you know, you may catch me talking about wrestling. You never know. So
I'm by me.
Yeah, all right. There we go, man. Follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show. And of course, Buccaneer News as it happens. Speaking of Bucks News as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucks_daily, the number one Buccaneers fan page on Instagram, rapidly approaching 30,000 followers. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL. Last but not least, you can find myself Instagram and Twitter, excuse me, it was the Bud Light sneaking out there. Instagram and Twitter at Redicus, R-H-E-T-T-A-K-U-S. If you follow me, I will follow you back.
I like it.
There you go. It's important.
I really hate those assholes.
You're good.
The people that have one follow, they only follow one person.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the Evans of the internet is, I think, who you're...
Oh, way more than one person.
I plugged this guy's Twitter at the end of every single episode, and I don't know if anybody in our live chat follows him on Twitter. I don't know if they got a follow back.
It's not like people are eager.
Evan, is it really like that, man?
No, it is. Listen, me and this guy did a podcast together for 3 years before I got a follow back.
Oh my goodness!
Wow.
To be fair, Rhett was not active on Twitter. Then all of a sudden, one day, he decides to be this active Bucs fan on Twitter, and all of a sudden, I'm the bad guy for not following an account who hadn't tweeted in like 3 years.
I got sucked in. I think that's the Twitter process, right? Everybody usually makes a Twitter, tries to use it for a week, and they're like, man, I don't know how to use this.
That's exactly what I did.
And then put it down for a year and a half and then pick it up, and now they've sucked me in. I can't get enough. But
there you go.
Follow us all on social media, ladies and gentlemen. That's the show this week. Thanks once again to my friend Gene from Buck What You Heard for joining the show. Check out his channel on YouTube, his podcast, of course, and follow him on Twitter at Buck What You Heard. We will talk to you guys later this week with our game preview show. The biggest division game of the season for Tampa Bay. A chance to clinch the NFC South title in front of their home fans. And they get to do it against that smelly-ass team from New Orleans. It should be a good one. We'll talk to you.
Cam Jordan.
Yeah. There you go, man. We'll talk to you guys later this week with more great Bucks content. Thanks for checking out this episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast, brought to you by our guys over at betonline.ag. I am your host, as always, Rhett Matthew, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish, and our very special guest, Gene. We'll talk to you guys later on this week. Until then, and as always, go Bucks.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute, and craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Feel like you got enough to do already? I do. That's why I use Shipt same day delivery to keep up with my busy life. They know the snacks I like down to the extra creamy in my peanut butter. I can get deliveries at home, on set, or even when I'm away on vacay. And my personal shopper, Amber, she's got my back. As in, she asks them to check the back if it's not on the shelf. Shipt, delight in every delivery. Learn more at shipt.com/hi.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Chapter 1. Wayfair welcomes you to the neighborhood. Our hero, Titus Burgess, ambled down the stylish street of an enchanting utopia. A woman waved from a chic lounger. "Welcome to the neighborhood," she said, "where Wayfair helps everyone create a home they love." Titus stared in awe. Bohemian Boulevard, Trendsetter Terrace, Mid-Century Circle.
Titus,
You're
reading the Wayfair catalog.
Oh, you'll love Chapter 2. Wayfair's fast and free shipping saves the potluck.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.